It's Wednesday, the 16th of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today,
all the rights of the Constitution ought to be respected. Do you believe that the democratic man ought to be afraid of any idea?
For decades, Fidel Castro was the only leader many people in Cuba ever knew. Now, in the face of crippling sanctions imposed by the United States, a new generation of leaders is taking control. We'll have analysis from our Latin America affairs correspondent, Lucinda Elliott. Plus, mayoral elections in Budapest reveal a stark shift away from the Hungarian president. Could a partnership between Boeing and Porsche finally see flying cars take off? And what's old is new again. Our fashion editor Jamie Waters examines the growing demand for secondhand clothing. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now.
What do you want that we do? You leave us without petroleum. Khrushchev, eat petroleum. You leave us without sugar, Khrushchev, buy sugar. You take our airplane, Khrushchev, land is our plane. Khrushchev is friend.
Are you a communist, Fidel?
Wait for the history. The history will take what we are.
The Cuban dictator Fidel Castro never tired of telling people on the Caribbean island that his revolution wasn't complete. It appears that he may have been proved posthumously correct. A generational changing of the guard is underway, apparently as part of a bid to protect Cuba's socialist system. Lucinda Elliott is Monocle's Latin America affairs correspondent.
Dr. Castro, the American people hope that a true democracy will emerge here in Cuba. How do you explain?
I will never be against any right that this may think in politics.
Very
I am
good.
Not communist at all. But I will never be again.
Well, it's part of a broader political reform of the single-party state, really, that began in April last year when Raúl Castro, who's Fidel's brother, passed the presidency to Díaz-Canel, who's not part of the family, and strongly hinted at the time that a generational change was needed to guarantee the continuity of the socialist system. So last week, some historical members of the Castro-led revolution of 1959 lost their positions in the government. Now, these are also very elderly gentlemen. Let's be frank. Among the 10 members removed was Guillermo García Frías, who's just turned 91. Now, President Canel has 3 months to nominate a prime minister to head up the Council of Ministers he used to lead, as well as governors for 15 different provinces. And these are also newly created positions.
Para presidente, Miguel Mario Díaz-Canel Bermúdez fueron 603 que representan.
Well, interestingly, you know, Raúl Castro still remains the head of the Communist Party, which is the ultimate authority on the island. He also oversees the armed forces, the intelligence services that wield deep influence over virtually every working of the Cuban state. But this reorganization, so to speak, which is actually part of a mandate approved in a referendum earlier this year, aims to free up the president, really, from the day-to-day activities of governing. So on paper, the changes basically divide the powers of the once dominant president held by Raúl, who simultaneously held all of the country's most important positions, and splits that power up. But Cuba is still a single-party state where many of the decision-making processes remain opaque. You know, it's important to remember that the National Assembly that just voted on all of this last week has been historically recognized as a powerless institution that is meant to just convey the image of parliamentary democracy while actually just rubber-stamping proposals written behind closed doors. So it's difficult to gauge right away, really, if this is more a cosmetic change or a truer rebalancing of power in Cuba.
We will not lift sanctions on the Cuban regime until all political prisoners are freed. Freedoms of assembly and expression are respected. All political parties are legalized, and free and internationally supervised elections are scheduled.
To Budapest now, where recent elections revealed a conspicuous shift away from Hungary's president, Viktor Orbán.
Pro-European centre-left politician Kergé Karaskonyi scooped half the vote to win Budapest mayoral election. But questions are still swirling about how best to challenge the country's nationalist Fidesz party. the ousting of the far-right incumbent is a blow to the authority of the Hungarian Prime Minister, Viktor Orbán, and marks a crucial moment of cooperation between the various competing opposition parties. The journalist, Valerie Hopkins, told Monocle that this is the first significant loss for Orbán since 2006. There's been unprecedented unity among the opposition. It'll be interesting to see if they can maintain the momentum going forward, and if they can build on the success of campaigning together to actually govern together.
A fantastic future of flying cars might be hovering a little closer this week with the signing of a memorandum of understanding between Boeing and the German carmaker Porsche. Monocle's Nick Manise has the story. Nick, how will this partnership work?
Well, Ben, it's a non-exclusive partnership. So basically they've set up an agreement where they are going to look for ways to work together, but they're not contractually obliged to only work with each other. So I guess it's more like being in a polyamorous relationship than perhaps a monogamous one. You know, and I guess to spice things up as well, Boeing's got a subsidiary called Aurora Flight Sciences, and they're also going to be involved. So maybe a little bit of a threesome perhaps. And actually Aurora Flight Sciences have already been developing autonomous electric aircraft, and they actually had a unpiloted vehicle take off earlier this year, hover for a few seconds and then land back down. But I guess the three of them more or less are going to be working together. And this is the official statement. They're going to be creating an international team to address various aspects of urban air mobility, including analysis of the market potential for premium vehicles and possible use cases. So it's all very vague at the moment. I guess in summary, they're basically going to be working together and they are going to be trying to develop a fully electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicle.
A non-traditional arrangement for what is a non-traditional idea, I suppose. I mean, it was only a little while ago that we kept saying, well, you know, the visions of the future were promising us phones that would be doubling as wristwatches. And if you go back to the old Dick Tracy movie, that's exactly what he had. And that was a promise that never came to fruition until finally it did. It doesn't take long for what seems like flights of fancy to sink into everyday life. What kind of vehicles are we actually talking about here, though? Is it clear? I mean, will those people imagining something out of the Jetsons be a little bit disappointed when this finally arrives?
Maybe Jetsons might be a bit misguided. I think we're more going to be seeing
something. It's not accurate.
It's not accurate, but Blade Runner actually might be a bit closer to the mark. We're going to be seeing vehicles that can take off. And I don't know if you remember the police vehicles in that film, but they take off vertically. And that's the sort of vehicles that we're going to be looking at. So they can be used, because most aircraft now fly, I guess, forward facing is what they're calling it. But these vehicles are going to be vertical. So it's going to be great to use in our cities and urban environments where they can just sort of drop in between buildings. But that also opens another, you know, an entire can of worms in terms of how we regulate that privacy and safety with these vehicles moving between buildings, but also how we manage the airspace in our cities and how we're going to regulate the movement of these new, I guess, urban air mobile vehicles.
Nick Manise will let you fly away. Thanks for joining us.
Meet George Jetson.
And finally today, Monocle's fashion editor, Jamie Waters, examines our renewed interest in pre-owned clothing.
Given that the luxury industry is built on being aspirational and exclusive, it's a little surprising that the luxury clothing resale and rental markets are booming. The online resale market is expected to more than double in size to 37 billion euros in the next 3 years. While the rental market is inundated with dynamic players. Perhaps the most intriguing thing is what this movement says about our shifting views toward high-end fashion, namely that items no longer need to be new in order to be covetable. Although vintage boutiques have existed for years, trailblazing resale and rental companies such as The RealReal and Rent the Runway are not trading nostalgic 80s gems. Their remit is almost new designer pieces instead. It would have been unfathomable, even a decade ago, to grow multi-million dollar businesses by selling pre-worn dresses and boots. So what's behind our softening stance on secondhand? Younger generations especially have grown accustomed to a borrower culture. We Uber, Spotify, and Airbnb regularly. We're comfortable using things that have previously been used by others. And then there's the S word, sustainability. Instead of being associated with pejorative hippy-dippy vibes, reusing, repurposing, and recycling have become ingrained in mainstream thinking as important, attractive things. So resourcefulness is celebrated, being wasteful is passé, and secondhand has a new sheen.
Monocle's Jamie Waters there, having a dig through piles of trash and treasure at his local charity shop. That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Thursday.